Right, let's do this.
Slime.
Howdy, friends.
Hi, kids.
Hey, Dad.
You got two fathers in here now. Steve, Seth's here too. He's another, although Seth's younger than me, he's old enough to be Oliver. He's old enough to be your dad too.
Am I like your stepbrother? Can we have bunk beds? Is like more room for
activity?
There's
gonna be so much room for activity. Yes.
So we're doing this on Skype and we can see each other, but you guys can't see us. Vito is rocking a tank top that is just, I mean, Sunday. Molly is a lucky woman, Vito. That's all I'm saying. Like, I hope she walked you down, buddy, because, you know, you're ready to go. Look at you, guns out, sipping out of a, what is that mug?
A tabby cat mug.
A tabby cat mug.
Yeah, look at that thing.
This is my tea drinking.
Anyway, so Nate's not here to keep us under control, so we're probably going to have a little bit more fun this week than we normally do. Welcome to the Illuminati podcast. We are going to break down all of what happened at UConn. Spoiler alert. They didn't fold the program afterwards, so they probably should. And then we're also going to get into BYU as well a little bit. And then we got a couple other things that we want to sort of discuss holistically about the program. But Seth, you're probably the best independent arbiter of all of us. You have remained unrelentingly positive in the face of SMU as well as Wisconsin beatdowns and other things this season. Give us the good things that we saw at UConn and why you're encouraged about what might happen this weekend for homecoming.
I think the positives you got to take out of it are being able to get the rushing game going. And I think on top of that, you didn't give up a sack, I don't think. And if you did, it might have been one. But you're able to get the rushing game going. So the offensive line play has improved. That's, for me, that's been really the biggest issue all year. Aside from maybe needing a few more guys that can get open. But for the most part, the biggest problem has been up front. And that was solved-ish for a game, at least, against UConn. Now, that might have been partially opponent, but there is improvement. You see signs of improvement everywhere, especially up front. So that's kind of the big thing for me. If they can make a big improvement there as the rest of the season goes on, they have a chance to win some more games and possibly win quite a few more games, because I think the biggest issue with the offense is that if they had that fixed, like we talked about, I think last week, if their offensive line was above average unit, I think the offense would be playing really well. But they're not quite there yet. But they took a good step last week. So I think that's the most encouraging thing out of that game was the play of the offensive line.
If the offensive line were above average, we'd be a very good football team. And if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. That's just kind of where we are.
Yes.
I got eye rolls there.
Sack time.
Speaking of sacks.
So, you know, I just don't. One of the things that I think, Seth, that you've brought is that I really agree with you, and I think I might agree with you more than you agree with you on this, which is there is just a talent dearth on this team that we weren't. I thought we weren't as talented as last year going in for sure, and definitely not as talented as 2 years ago. My God, of course not. But the lack of just pure unadulterated ability on this team, and I think that's something that you pointed out early in the season, and I think that accounts for a lot. I don't know. I don't think we're very good. I don't see a path to a bowl game here, and the difference between 3-9 and 5-7 is sort of irrelevant to me. And even if it's like, you know, 2-10, which would mean a lose out, I'm not like going to be devastated at this point. Either get to 6 or don't go anywhere. Let's either blow this thing up and crater it, or let's find a way to salvage the season. But I just don't think there aren't enough horses there in the schedule. Now the schedule gets tough starting this week. We got one kind of easy game left in ECU. That's not necessarily a guaranteed win, though. They are better than they've been the last few years for sure. But the rest of the way, it just got a lot tougher.
How different do you feel if USF's 3-2 right now? Is there a real big difference to you? If they were able to come out, or is it just cosmetic?
We were 7-0 last year saying this team stinks. So like that.
That doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. Like we're, you know, wins and losses wise, USF hasn't beaten a non-UConner, and UConn should be an FCS, hasn't beaten a non-UConner or FCS team in 300 and whatever days. You know, it's been too long, and it's not good. So when we were 7-0, we knew we were bad. When we were 11-2 in 2017, we knew we weren't as good as we should be. In 2015, when we were 8-5, we're like, we got something here. And 2016, we're like, even after we lost FSU, we're like, we're still really, really good. Defense was trash, but we knew our offense was amazing and special.
The only thing I will say is I think that Georgia Tech loss, especially the way it was, stings a lot. If you come away saying SMU and Wisconsin, who are two top 25 teams, and SMU might legitimately be very good, you feel a little different now, especially with the fact that Kerwin Bell's offense is brand new, and it's you're seeing the progression. Now, we have the benefit now of doing these film rooms, so we could see that, all right, the offensive line isn't holding, so here's what they're doing to try to repair that, or you're seeing these plays actually work over time. Now, if you go ahead and do this against BYU, at least now you see that there's progression, and maybe this is going to take a little bit of time to get the offense rolling, but when it does, it will be good. Mm-hmm. Last year, at least with Gilbert, we saw that it's run up the middle, throw a bomb. If those don't work, you're going to
run it
on
middle.
Execution. Yeah, it's just one of those things where we saw that there was a little bit of stagnant offense there, and it didn't feel like the players were jiving. I'm not really seeing the players having an issue with what's happening right now outside of the full-on wins and losses. But I feel like there's a little bit different now because of the way that the coaching staff is.
Yeah, just from the outside looking in and just from what you guys said last year, it's kind of like a lot of people don't want to hear the execution that, well, we just got to execute better. But there is a difference between like, hey, I'm going to run the ball into this loaded box where they got as many guys as I do. And well, yeah, if my guy's just executing block the guy they're supposed to, every play's going to work perfect. There's a difference between that, which I think is what you guys kind of say was last year. It was like, well, I don't care if there's 10 guys in the box. We got 10 blockers. And then where it is this year, from what I'm seeing, is – okay, if I'm executing, I don't actually have to block. Like, we watched a few where they didn't have to, they had a 6-man box against UConn, and you could watch that on the film room. But they didn't even have to block all 6. And on defense, they're rushing where UConn's got 6 blockers and they only rush 5, but they're still able to get pressure without being a man down in the scheme. So just schematically, I think that's maybe the difference between the 2 years is when they say execute, they're saying execute a scheme that if you do it, you have an advantage. Not that the scheme it's not being executed just based on who has the better players. It's just that if you do your job, this should work. Instead of, well, I just have to have the better players. If I have the better players, it's going to work every time.
Spoiler alert, we did the film room before we did this, and we closed one of the things in the film room is, I think we're smarter. We're definitely a smarter football team than we were last year. Scheme-wise, we're 100%, you know, it's light years ahead. I would have loved to have seen the scheme in 2016, and 17 would have been amazing to watch, especially 17. I really mean it for 17. But I just don't think we have it as the horses. You know, we're just light on talent, and that's going to be an issue, and that's something that can't necessarily be completely overcome with scheme. Stieg, your thoughts.
It may not be talent. It might be part of its fit, I think, too. Mm-hmm. Sure. Because they're not being asked to, especially up front. Those guys were asked to, all right, if we're running inside zone a ton, you guys are box players. We're in the box. You guys have to, you know, we'll double team maybe, or I gotta, you know, I'm taking just zone steps and I'm doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I want those big maulers up front. Whereas this system wants some different things, even outside of skill position. If I'm just going to take deep shots, maybe I want that straight line speed guy that's a little bigger and maybe a little more stiff. Whereas this system wants everybody to be able to run precise routes where I maybe don't want obviously it's great to have a guy with great top line speed, but if he can't get in and out of cuts and run routes precisely, then it's not going to be as beneficial in the system. So it could be fit too. Yeah. Could be part of it.
Well, I was going to say the scheme's sitting on both sides of the ball right now. We'll talk about the offensive scheme quite a bit, but the defensive scheme that they're, adjusting to is also paying its dividends as well. You're seeing more creative looks. You're seeing, creative blitzing. We're going to reference film room a lot, but we broke down how, we're showing different fronts instead of just that typical 4-2 defense that, we've seen for the past 4 years. Now it's getting some different looks, but Seth, you hit it right on the head. I mean, there's a reason why we're seeing these young guys playing. Xavier Weaver, Bryce Miller, Jordan McLeod, Kelly Joyner. There's a reason why these names are consistently popping up in the stat sheet. They're good. They fit the scheme a lot better than, no offense to Dr. Professor Stanley Clairvaux, the scheme doesn't really fit his skill set. He's tall, but he doesn't have the speed that, the Xavier Weavers of the world do. And looking ahead to the recruiting class that we have coming up, of course, all these guys are verbal, so they're not locked in, but you're seeing where this is kind of scheming towards this, very fast but precise offense that they're trying to run. It's a really smart offense. I just think that that Wisconsin game was the worst possible game we could have started with. Just couldn't get anything going. Georgia Tech is just unfortunate, and then SMU is just, I mean, they're a monster right now. They're not getting stopped by anyone, and we caught them on a hot point. Now I think they're starting to settle in a little bit. I think the confidence is growing a little bit, especially against UConn and South Carolina State, where you could say, hey, yeah, when it works really, really well. Now we just need to see it executed on a higher level against better teams.
And I just don't know if we get there this year. And it's unfortunate because those players that you're talking about, Seth, the players that and Steve, the players that fit our system better, this system fits what we should be as a team so much better than what we've done the last 2 years. It's, veer and shoot for a team in Florida where especially a secondary market where you've got skill athletes that grow on trees. You can keep kids home and keep them out of lower tier Big Ten schools, lower tier Big 12 schools, and you can keep them here and compete because there's just so many of them. That's what USF football should be, no matter who the coach is. We're in the American Conference. Nobody's coaching here for 10 years. Like, you're either fired or you're out of the league. Like, that's what's going to happen. And so we should commit as an institution to a scheme like the one that we're running right now, something that uses pace and speed and athletes, realizes that it's going to be tough for us to get Wisconsin-style offensive linemen. That's just going to be a real challenge for us going forward. But we can get the skill athletes on the side offensively, and then defensively, of course, speed, and more speed. Even if their guys are a little bit smaller, run them down. If you got to run them down from behind, you can run them down from behind. Don't let them score. That's okay. So that's where I think we should go. And I think this is a lot better fit. I like the where we are, especially schematically. But horses for courses. And unfortunately, look, let's deal in realities here. It's year three for Charlie Strong, and if this team goes 4-8, 3-9, well, we got a much better scheme that's very possibly not going to be here next year. So we'll see.
And the toughest part especially for a head coach, is you bring in a guy offensively a few years ago, and from what I've heard and from what you guys have told me just here, that Strong basically kind of gives his coordinators latitude to kind of do things as they want. Maybe not on particular game management calls of when to go for it, things like that. But for the most part, he lets them kind of run what they want to run. So I would guess that also extends to recruiting. So they recruit who they want to recruit, who they think fits for them. And I know we've heard stories of them not recruiting even a local quarterback last year that probably would fit really good.
Michael Penix.
It would probably fit really well in a lot of systems, but for whatever reason, he didn't fit in that one. It's not necessarily, especially on that side of the ball, I think the recruiting woes aren't necessarily that these guys have no clue what they're looking for. They don't know how to identify talent. It's that they were letting the guys that are gone now were the ones that were picking the players they wanted, kind of thing. So, but the buck stops with the head man, so that's kind of part of it. But you're seeing the recruiting pick up on that side of the ball now. So what's the difference? Somebody left. Somebody else came in. So
I am all – look, if there's a way that we could get – and I'm just trying to deal in realities here. Like if this team does lose out and if we're looking at 2-10 and 3-9, I don't see how you can run Charlie back for year four off a 3-9 team in on the I-4 corridor against this schedule with the expectations of this program. I understand we don't have an indoor practice facility, but 3-9 is 3-9. And that's not good enough. I would love to see us be able to get a head coach that would be able to fold in what we're doing offensively into the greater plan and keep a lot of these guys, because I agree with you. I think the scheme is smarter. I think the recruiting's been much, much better. We're a better program than we were 12 months ago, for sure. The problem is that it's going to be hard to show that on the field with the players that you have right now. And, yes, you know, there's a lag time in these things. You know, recruiting is a lagging economy, and it always has been, and that's just the way it's going to be. So I don't know if we're going to have the time for them, for these guys to show what I think they can do. And then it becomes a matter of how does any new head coach, assistant coach, whomever it might be, fold in what's been done, build on top of it, or do we just, you know, right click reset and do the whole damn thing over again, which doesn't sound super exciting, but also might be, you know, what must be done here.
I agree. So I guess we'll move into, I mean, there's not much to talk about the UConn game, right? I mean, it's goddamn UConn. You know, we're not breaking out barriers. You know, talking about what happened then. I mean, obviously a good USF win under the belt, you know, in that FBS losing streak, but.
Whoa. How about shout out to walk-on wide receiver and Eastlake alum, Bryce Miller?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, it's can't talk highly enough about Bryce Miller and, I will also say, Andrew Mims, two walk-ons who are just playing well above their pay grade right now.
Get those kids paid. At least, like, legally paid with a scholarship. That sounds good. It's tough to extrapolate a lot from UConn. Look better than we did last year against UConn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's sure. That's fine, but it's still UConn. So, like, you know, half of the people that were in the stands there, and those stands, I don't know if you guys saw the crowd shot.
No, wow, I saw the skyline, though.
What?
The skyline. That the skyline. Was, oh, my God.
for 10 minutes at a time.
Sure. 10 minutes, that was the best halftime show I've ever seen, was that skyline for 12 and a half minutes. I mean, my God.
I think I voted for the pointy one, by the way.
It's about the tall.
Follow us on Twitter if you have no idea what we're talking about. But it's UConn. So, like, you know, let's not take too much good or bad out of it. And I think we'll get a better test. We'll see a little bit more with BYU, which is probably a program certainly with more talent. You know, they tend to be a little bit older at BYU. They they have a lot of kids that take a 2-year sabbatical and go do mission work. And so if you're not familiar with BYU's process, they take a lot of kids at like 18 and 19, and then they send them to Africa and South America and the Far East for 2 years, where they knock on doors and they try and get people to become members of the Latter-day Saints Church. And then they come back and they're 21 and 22, and they don't lose any eligibility for their 2 years that they are overseas. And so because of that, they come back, they got a lot of 23 and 24 year olds. What's his name? The backup quarterback in, New Orleans right now, who plays
Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill. It was like 24, he broke his leg twice. He was like 24 when he was playing his last season there, I think. So, you know, guys like that, they tend to get an older, you know, wiser type of player. There are certainly challenges to recruiting at BYU. So it's not like they're getting 5-star kids everywhere, but they tend to be a little bit more talented. So I think we'll be able to extrapolate a lot more about this team. We said we know a lot about this team after SMU. That didn't go so great. I think we'll also be able to know a little bit more about this team after BYU. And if they do find a way to keep it closer, get a win, you know, then maybe I'll be a little bit more positive in my outlook, and maybe they are getting better, but I just, it's hard to take away anything from, like, man, we go watch our film room, watch 37 for UConn. That kid is so starting nickelback, and I don't think we saw one play where he did anything right. Like, he's just like, the offense was, hey, go find 37 and run at him. Throw the ball near 37.
I was about to say, Seth and I kind of talked about it last week before the SMU game, and I think it's still true this week. And Seth, you might correct me if I'm wrong. We still don't really have a good idea of how good this team is, just because our schedule has been two really good teams, two really bad teams, and then Georgia Tech, which that's just... That was just,
which is like, what's, yeah, Georgia, the Tech Georgia, bad. Georgia Tech is Georgia like, they're bad, but it's also a game you probably should have won too. Yeah. Like even,
should have won.
Even have, bad, yeah, you win the game right there. So that one's strange. And then you got Wisconsin, who's, defensively, just a juggernaut.
Has not given up a single touchdown to a non-conference opponent this year.
Yeah. They set some kind of record or something. For the first time in a long time, didn't give up a single point outside of conference, because I think they're done with their non-conference schedule. So they didn't give a single point out of conference. They haven't given up many in conference. They're number one in almost every measure defensively. So that's a tough one to kind of judge the team by. SMU, offensively, seems like they can kind of score on anybody. They kind of sleptwalked their way to 38 last week, or was it 38? I know it took a couple overtimes, but
yeah.
Yeah. They kind of sleepwalked to 30, which is pretty insane, and their quarterback didn't even play well. If he played as well as he did against USF, I'm sure they would have scored quite a bit more, or vice versa. If he played like he did last week against USF, it might have been a different game. But I think BYU, just kind of watching them, and I'm getting ready for the preview article on Friday, I think they're probably somewhere between UConn and SMU would be my guess. Probably a little bit better than Georgia Tech, but not quite. I don't think they're quite as good as SMU is.
Is that your professional opinion, that they're somewhere between like the worst team in college football and like a top 20 team?
A middling. Like, I'd say they're probably a little bit better than Georgia Tech. It might be a wide range, but I'm just talking about the schedule. They're no Wisconsin. They're no South Carolina State.
Before we go on Georgia Tech is 1-4. Here's, and I hate going results oriented, but.
Not very good.
Sample size is okay at this point. They lost to Clemson 52-14. They beat us by 4. They lost to the Citadel by 3. They scored 2 points at Temple. I don't know if that was a voluntary safety or not, but they scored 2 and lost 24-2.
It was a bad punt again.
A bad punt? Okay. Yeah. And then UNC beat them 38-22. Yeah, so they're really bad. We lost a coin flip game on the road, but to a very bad football team.
Yeah.
That's a bad team. You lost to the Citadel. At home.
That's a triple, came back and got him.
Poetically.
Gotcha. I mean, I know. Temple? You scored 2 points on Temple. 2. Yeah. And they messed up a punt.
Yeah, they're not very good. But BYU's very hard to read, because their schedule, I know some measures have them top, a lot of measures have them top 15, depending on where you go. Their strength of schedule so far is the top 15 schedule. But, you know, they probably shouldn't have beat Tennessee if you look at the numbers. Southern Cal game, I don't know. Toledo, I mean, they just lost to Toledo, who is actually, I'm pretty sure if you look at SP Plus, even though they're 4-1, they're ranked lower than USF. So it's really hard to say exactly what you're going to get out of BYU. Tough schedule, 2-3, with wins over Tennessee and USC. But, you know, you watch them and you're like, this isn't an unbelievable team. Their quarterback was pretty good. He's hurt. The backup is a pretty athletic guy. And because, like, they'd bring him in to run jet sweep and stuff like that and hand it to him. But he's a pretty good thrower, too. They kind of said he's more of a thrower, but he's a little more athletic than the last guy as well. They've got pretty good skill guys. But defensively, a lot of people are talking about their nose tackle. Coach Strong mentioned him. Kerwin mentioned him today. But they don't put a lot of pressure on the passer. They're towards the bottom of the country in sacks per game. I think they might have like 4 or 5 for the season, you know, and, you know, to compare, I think USF had 5 last week against UConn. So they're a hard team to read. I'm not quite sure exactly what's coming through. on Saturday. If this is going to be a real big challenge or, you know, kind of a moderate one.
So I may or may not have had a vested financial interest in that BYU-Tennessee game, and was very happy with the comeback because I actually did have BYU. So I watched that one, but it's a totally different team now because with Taylor out, they're just a completely different, you know, football.
Well, their quarterback's out, and then their top running back is also out, and they're missing some guys in the secondary. So they're a little banged up. And they're just not, when you watch them, there's not, you think BYU, you kind of think of the tradition, you think of, you know, big guys that can move, and they got some good skill guys, but up front, they're not unbelievable. They are, now USF is last in the country, or not last, second to last in sacks allowed, but BYU is not like unbelievable up front. They're allowing 3 or 4 a game or something to that effect. Their run defense is terrible and their run offense isn't much better. They're towards the bottom of the country in rush defense. I think they're giving up over 200 yards a game rushing, and they have, just looking at their offense right now, they have 510 yards rushing this year, so 3.5 yards a carry rushing the ball. So they're not unbelievable running the ball. So some of the spots you may think, well, you know, if USF's, they're just going to be able to kind of road grade them. Well, they haven't been able to. They ran, you know, 26 times against Toledo for 101 yards. And then Toledo, I think, subsequently ran the ball on them pretty well. Yeah, Toledo ran 56 times for 242 yards.
The other thing, 9-19 in the red zone. So really struggling, you know, once they get inside the 20, they're having trouble putting the ball in the end zone, which is probably a good sign for USF.
Yeah, so I think there's some matchups that could, you know, and it's hard to tell again exactly because of the competition they played, and is USF's offensive line going to travel from Connecticut back down to Tampa? So if that travels and you're able to run the ball, then this is a totally different kind of game. This is a game you can win. If you're going to have trouble running the ball against this rush defense that's already given up 1,000 yards this season through 5 games and has given up 4.6 yards a carry, you know, if you can't run against them, you might be in trouble. So
I think a good X factor for this game, well, he's been the X factor pretty much all season, is going to be Mitchell Wilcox's ability to block and give ample not only pass protection but run blocking. You know, I think a lot of people on Twitter are upset about his lack of targets, and you know, he's not filling up the stat sheet. But I mean, you got to remember, tight ends have two jobs, and he does both of those things beautifully, with a big smile on his face, regardless. So, you know, I think if we can open up the run game behind Mitchell Wilcox, you know, those throws are going to come to him. It's just, I mean, we got to get the run game going this game.
Yeah, and targets don't necessarily. And one thing that everyone's always talking about targets, especially the guys up in the press box, the journalists are always talking about targets. How many targets does he have? You know, what I look at it is, are they scheming to get him open? And sometimes you'll see him running wide open. So obviously they're scheming to get him open. The quarterback's got to hit it. Or, you know, last week he had a target against UConn and got pulled to the ground and they didn't call it. So, you know, or I think that is being overblown by people that, you know, maybe aren't quite understanding what they're watching.
I'm less concerned about targets and I'm more concerned about efficiency on the whole. You can play off of Wilcox as well. Like if he's on like a Y seam or something like that, he's pulling a linebacker or a safety or somebody else. He's keeping somebody in. So that means your slot can get open. So that means somebody can hit a crossing route underneath him. That means, you know, you can use him as a decoy just as effectively. I think Seth, that our historical knowledge of the program here also sort of colors this too. Our diehards, we've never really had a tight end that sort of put up big numbers in program history. Yeah. It's been a position that's just been a struggle literally since 1997, basically. And I think there's some frustration there that we've had some pretty good kids go through the program. You know, even a kid like Kano Dillon, who we all thought was going to be like a super stud. He had one like massive game and then just never really never really made it. And I think that's part of it too, is that we're just sort of frustrated with the overall usage of tight ends.
And I think another kind of factor in is once they get the run game going a little bit better, I think you'll see him get even more open. Cause there's times in, again, we'll reference the film room we did just for UConn, but, you know, they were able to run an ISO with the tight end and then they come right back to it and slip him up the seam. Now it wasn't Wilcox it was in, but that's the kind of stuff when you get the run game going, now you can start using that guy in a bunch of different ways and get him wide open where there's really I don't have to really make a lot of reads. I know I can just, I'm going to make this play action fake. I know the linebacker is going to suck up for the run and I can just drop it over their heads, like on a, almost like a wide pop, which everybody runs even from Pop Warner. So
yeah,
once the run game gets going, you can, that'll help him too. But, I'd imagine what I'll be interested to see is with, the Johnny Ford suspension kind of came down later in the week last week. It wasn't like something that they knew before, but I know, we heard later in the week. So I don't know if they schemed for that or not. And if that's something that they weren't aware of, then maybe this week you'll see more with the, well, you'll see more 12 personnel. You'll see more of those two tight end sets, taking advantage of, emerging tight end Mathis, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. We
he's played really well the last 2 weeks. I think that maybe you'll see more with both those guys in there.
So we should probably mention Ford out for possibly the season. We're hearing conflicting things, most likely for a while though. He's not going to play too much this year, and since he has played four games or less so far this season, he might be eligible to take a red shirt, so it might be smarter at this point for him just not to play at all again this year anyway. Whether he plays again for USF, I guess that's another question. We can, you know, go down that road at some point. But we said at the beginning of the season that putting Johnny Ford in the system was going to be a huge advantage because they could put him all over the field and do things with him. And, you know, in a spread and space scheme that Kerwin Bell fits Johnny Ford. He's that kind of player that fits this well. Well, now that he's gone, that's, you know, maybe with the exception of Wilcox, probably the most talented guy you've got at a skill position. And to lose him is just going to make things, you know, that much more challenging, you know, going forward here.
Yeah, but I think maybe because earlier in the season, Mathis was kind of sliding down the depth chart there, you know, or in one of the early games, he wasn't even on the two deep. So I think maybe whatever's happening, he's kind of emerged the last couple of weeks. So maybe that is a way they can kind of mask some of those deficiencies is by using both those tight ends more because they're both good players.
They both present great mismatches. It's just it's a different type of mismatch when you think Johnny Ford versus.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir on that one, but.
So you BYU's new quarterback Hall for the season is now 4 of 7. He went 3 of 6 after Wilson got hurt in the Toledo game. 3 of 6 for 39 yards. Didn't really do anything. Too much, and then they've had a bye week also to get ready.
Yeah, he came in the last drive of the Toledo, like literally the last drive of the Toledo game. He, I think was it Wilson or whatever got hurt the second to last drive, and then he had to come try to lead the drive to tie the game up. So it was all throws. It was, you know, 2 minute drive he came in for. Yikes. And they also used him in the jet sweep game. They handed it to him, and then I think one they handed it to him or flipped it back to him, and he threw it. So they've used him a little bit this year, just not much at quarterback because they haven't had any garbage time, you know, games really thus far. Maybe Utah and Washington, but they kept their guys in.
That Utah game was not garbage. That was a war down the stretch. Utah just mauled them up front. Yeah. I watched that one too. Yeah.
So it's not like they have had a lot of time to get him reps.
So
their QB coach Ty Detmer. Well. Former Heisman Trophy winner Ty Detmer is speaking highly of him, saying, you know, he's able to make all the throws. You know, he's still young. He's still a young guy. Got to learn. But according to what they've seen in practice the last 2 weeks, he's been able to kind of step in and fill that void. But, you know, it's different, you know, wearing a red non-contact jersey versus, you know, having Greg Reeves and Kirk Livingstone running straight at you, but you know, I'm interested to kind of see how he's going to develop this game. You know, if he's going to have a freshman game or if he's going to kind of be a sensation guy.
And Seth, probably a good question for you here is you got a kid who's going to make his first start as a quarterback. If you're a defensive coordinator, is this just when you throw the playbook at him, dial up exotic blitzes, do some different kind of things, try and do some things to disguise your safeties, disguise your looks a little bit more?
I mean, you probably want to do some of the disguise stuff. I don't know about, you know, there's kind of two thoughts. So you can kind of go that more risk and make them, you know, try to bring the heat on him, but then you also might give him some easy throws that now he hits an easy throw and now he's feeling it a little bit. Whereas if you make him sit back there and kind of earn it, it's kind of six in one, half dozen the other. But I think disguise would probably be the way to go. Especially disguise your safeties a little bit, see if you can get him to, you know, maybe think you're going to have middle of the field open. Kind of what happened last week to McLeod, where he thought he had middle field open and took a shot down the middle of the field, and it was really a different coverage than he might have thought. You know, mix it up a little bit, do some stuff like that. Bring some controlled pressures like they did against UConn, where you're kind of attacking the pass protection scheme without having to expose your coverage by bringing a lot of players. If you can get pressure with four or five and then drop guys back underneath, then I think that's the stuff that's going to give them problems. They'll probably try to, and you know what they probably saw in film last week, and what they'll probably try to come out and do is they'll try to throw some screens, and hopefully they can get, UConn caught USF in a couple pressure looks and was able to hit some screens for some pretty big plays. Now one, was a lot of missed tackles, but there was one they hit for a touchdown, which was just they caught him, they blitzed from the opposite side and they caught him and they caught him kind of rotating to cover up for the blitz. So that's kind of where you can expose yourself. If you're like, it's a young guy that just bring pressure, maybe they'll be able to hit an easy screen. And they have some good skill guys that once they get the ball in space, they can make you miss and take it. So I think probably the disguise would be the way to go, but then kind of that controlled pressure that they brought against UConn is probably the way you want to bring it. You don't want to come with, out there with your hair on fire, just bringing a bunch of people and then get creased on a couple screens. Cause I think for a young quarterback early game, there's not much to read on a screen. You kind of just take your steps, invite the pressure upfield and drop it off to your guy. So those are the kind of throws that probably want to get them. So you want to make sure you can take those away and not get creased by one of those.
So it is homecoming, with a 3:30 kick that should really help attendance. I hope, USF always overdraws for homecoming. People do come back. I got a couple friends coming in town this weekend. I know a lot of people do. There are probably more student organizations doing things around homecoming than they've done in a while. It seems like as bad as the football team is, it seems like the engagement from alumni, you know, relative to, if you put this to on a graph, like the football team's going down, but the level of engagement for alumni has been a little bit better. I think that's an encouraging sign. And so I hope we have a good crowd out there on Saturday. I'll be very interested to see the student crowd. You know, does BYU as a name draw any students that would normally not come? Does the weather being hopefully not brutally ungodly hot help? Does it being homecoming help? It'd be nice to have a good atmosphere for homecoming. I haven't talked to anybody this week about what ticket sales or numbers might specifically be for this game. So whenever we figure that out, I guess we'll figure that out in the stands. So we'll see. And it'll be fun. And, you know, win or lose, BYU is a fun opponent. Go tailgate with them, offer them beer, allow them to play or refuse. And
Colin, no. Colin.
What?
No.
Use your beer. It's okay.
No, you offer them root beer.
Offer them root beer. You know what? Yeah. Bring a little root beer to your tailgate. That would be nice.
Caffeine free.
Caffeine free root beer and play the Book of Mormon on Broadway for your tailgates.
I probably won't.
So
Orlando. Sorry.
That got weird. So I talked to Matt Brown.
Book of Molly kept singing, but I decided to mute it. So sorry. Continue.
Hi, Molly.
Hi, Molly. so the uh, for Sorry, I'm totally flustered now. So for BYU, I talked to Matt Brown about this. Apparently the caffeine thing isn't like, it's a coffee thing more than a caffeine thing.
Oh.
Like, I don't know exactly. It's not what you think, though, with the – there's – they actually – we're talking about putting, like, a Starbucks on campus.
I thought it was no stimulants.
It's something – they're allowed to drink, like, something, but they can't drink coffee, but they can have, like
– this is way off the rails now.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm not quite sure if there are any members of the LDS Church out there who can help us. I think we did do a blog exchange with Vanquish the Foe, which is their SB Nation blog, and we might have mixed in a question or two about that as well. But it should be an interesting tailgate. I am way more excited for the tailgate in Provo. I think it's in 21, right, when we go to Provo? I am way more excited to tailgate in Provo because I have no idea what that's going to look like, and I want to find out.
I've got a good story for after the podcast about someone that I know from Provo, so we'll save for after that.
All right. Good podcasting. Veto tape.
You're welcome.
That's the tease, non-tease.
The tease, non-tease.
Don't even tease that, because that's not fair to the listener. Like, here, we're going to talk about something we can't tell you.
I mean, I can talk about it. It's just I'm throwing someone completely under the bus for – well, I'll just give a long story short. One of my vendors that I work with at Tech Data – is from Provo, and we went to New Orleans for a work event, and man, they cannot hold their alcohol, man. I mean, it is I'm like six hurricanes deep. I'm feeling great. You know, I could probably go for more alcohol at that point. He's like half a hurricane throwing up on the side of Bourbon Street, and he's like, man, what's in this? And I'm like, rum. Like,
no, God.
They're dying. Jeez. Man.
Yeah, and speaking of road trips, I had some friends reach out to me this week about the USF at Tulane basketball game this year. Might have to make a little roadie up there for that one. There's nothing better than a road trip to Tulane. While we're in the same league, let's at least take advantage of that, even though they're going to be terrible at basketball this year. So we wanted to talk about something that was not necessarily related to football, but kind of is. So I don't know if y'all saw, but our neighbors to the east lost a football game on national television on Friday night. They challenged the Bearcats of Cincinnati, who ended up being victorious and probably should have won by more. But yeah, when you start a freshman quarterback on the road, I think what you have to do instantly there is call for your coach to be fired immediately. So
like any healthy program.
Like any healthy program, yeah, true freshman quarterback on the road loses by a field goal. Yeah, I think that's definitely cause to fire a coach. And
that's how you know they're big. That's how you know they're big time now. They want to fire the coach after two losses.
I believe it was
that's like Alabama level delusion.
Pretty amazing. It was, of course, Houston's Renuka Tour said, we fire coaches at 8-4. My God, what would she do at UCF? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So, but the bigger thing that came out of that game was 3 million impressions for Cincinnati football on, I think, just Twitter. I think it's 3 million impressions just on Twitter. Mm-hmm. For the little post-game video that they made, which if you haven't seen it, go on the Cincinnati football page or just Google Cincinnati football, UCF Twitter, you'll see it. It's hilarious. They made a little Disney style video, that just finished with a little screen grab across the bottom that said, you hate to see it. Hilarious. And they did a really nice job and they took advantage of a great moment. They also did that while across the street, they were doing Midnight Madness for basketball as well. So they pulled all of this together. They had their biggest home game of the year, all their fans out, everybody, and then they put all of this great social media stuff out, and then also transitioned immediately into going to basketball across the street and get ready for hoop season with Jaron Cumberland and what's going to be a really good basketball team too. Why can't I believe it was our once athletic director Doug Willard who used to say, when people say why USF, I say why not USF, and that was his famous quote that he used to give constantly for about 10 years here at like every event. When I see social media from some of the other teams in our league or our peer schools that just kicks our ass, why not USF? Why are we so consistent with nothing with a little bit of attitude or catchy, something that would go viral, something that would really push. I know we got talented people. I know our social media staff and the people that work there. I know they are very, very good. Why are they limited, and why can't we get this to the next level? You know, if we, you know, beat the Knights, not that this year or, you know, when we've done in the past, we've never done anything to like really sell it. We've never done anything in any program where you go, wow, that's so cool. That's so over the top. That's amazing. Why can't we do that kind of stuff?
I wrote a pretty lengthy, almost academic style piece about it that I don't think is probably going to get posted anytime soon, but
it's going up. We're going to run that.
Yeah. I just, for me, cause I think pretty frankly, I'm in that prime demographic of the people that are impressioned by Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And it's heartbreaking for me as someone who is a fan of the program, is an alumni of the school, and directly works with and alongside these people, that they just don't get it. They don't understand it. They use Twitter and all these social media feeds as another way to convey information, which is fine, because that's what it's all coming down to, is you're getting instantaneous information instead of waking up and reading a newspaper the next day to find out, you know, hey, Spencer Schrader ran in a field goal against UConn. Instead of reading that the next day in the newspaper, now we're getting instant gratification, and you can quickly send out information and get a response from it. The problem is, for me at least, that there's no personality. There's no voice behind the program. There's not a human connection that you're getting. You're seeing a verified with a checkmark account just spitting information. And that works for just the basic level, but to go to the next level of being entertaining on social media as well, to capture the attention, to get the impressions that you need, you have to step out of the comfort level of just conveying information. You have to have a personality. You have to have someone with a personality.
To build your fans, to get your fans re-engaged, to give them a reason to follow you, to look for your content. When we're just basically sending out like press releases with emojis, that ain't good enough. And I know our people are talented. I know they are. I know they have the ability to do some fun and different and interesting things, to give it some voice, to give it some personality, to make it, you know, to mix in a meme every once in a while. And the other thing that you talk about, the engagement, you know, we send stuff out. We don't interact with anybody. You know, we don't, if a national writer, you know, we don't, if national writer bags on USF, we don't like crack back on them. If, you know, if somebody points out something that's positive, or like, you know, is traveling the world with one of those little Rocky dolls that people were doing for a while. And like, mm-hmm. there's a guy on top of Mount Everest with a Rocky doll. Make something cool out of that. You know what I mean? Make something fun and interesting. Engage your fans, in ways that are, you know, and at this point, man, this is like requirements. You know, this isn't like 10 years ago where you could be like the cutting edge program that did some cool stuff on Twitter. You know, where you literally had, this is back when you still had to type in RT on a tweet when you were retweeting somebody. Okay, fine. But now this is, there's a standard that's been set here, and there are specialists and there are people. Look at what the Lightning do. The Lightning are fantastic. The Rays guy's really good, you know, in this market. The best ones that I've seen, the Sixers are great. The Trailblazers are terrific. There are some pro accounts out there that are really, really good. I got to say, our friends up the street, they're super annoying, and they are eating a ton of crow right now because of all the stuff they've done over the last 2 years. I wouldn't want that voice to be our voice, because I think that voice is obnoxious and wrong and kind of trashy. But they have a voice, and they got a standard, and they've met it. Yep. You know, I don't like their voice. I wouldn't want to be their voice, but you can find something that's somewhere in the middle that's really, really good. And we just have completely failed on this level.
And I will say they do have potential, because I called to it in the article. There's the potential of the program showing that side of the personality, that grit. And the prime example of it was using the the picture of Tiger McCants dragging that poor UCF linebacker into the end zone and using that as a billboard and the prime position across 275 with the two billboards sitting right across from each other as a way to promote season tickets. The idea of it is fantastic. I wish hindsight 2020, I wish we won that game so that we could have almost stuck out a middle finger to our friends in Orlando. But regardless, the thought of it was excellent. The execution was on point. I thought it was hilarious. And if we could have carried that momentum a little bit more into the realm of being self-aware and giving a personality, we have so much.
We've lost Stieg. So he literally unplugged his microphone mid-sentence.
He was so impassioned. I was so impassioned about it. There's just so much potential in the program, not only on the football team, but in the marketing department, that it hurts me as someone who interacts with the football department and studied marketing.
It's working into the day. It's got to be fixed. Like, to get better, we have to get better in all ways, on and off the field. Find some of the, and I know we've got them. It's be one thing if I thought we just didn't care, but we got people. We got to take the cuffs off. Take a chance. I don't know how much of this is being controlled by University Communications and Marketing, which is like the central. They're the people who came up with the logo, by the way. So I don't know how much involvement they have with the voice that is USF. I hope zero. I think that's probably unlikely that it is zero, though. We got to get better. And that's got to be an administrative wide decision that has to be considered across all departments. It's okay. You don't need to be down the street. You don't need to be a-holes. But you can have a little swag, you can have a little fun, and engage with people and make, social media isn't just like, hitting click on a press release when your gamer's done and sending it out to media. That's not what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be fun and interesting and different and not just emojis, not just hashtag, not just emojis. So anyway, if you're listening to this, you probably found us on social media because you listen to podcasts, which means you're on social media, which means you're cool. I have demographics at my real job that back that up. So we can, if you've got anything like that, if you've got some suggestions, some things that you've seen out in the college or pro social media universe, send them to us. Show us what you think and what you'd like USF to be more like, because I think this is a discussion that we probably need to start having. Swag it out, man. Let's go.
More UMBC, less your dad's Twitter account.
The only reason any of you know who UMBC is that one guy when they're beating Virginia. And what he did is a clinic. It is perfect. We need to. I don't know if anyone could do that ever again. First of all, you got to beat a one seed as a 16. Kind of a big deal. Kind of matters there too. But the way that they handled it, and the voice, and the attitude, and how they put it together, flawless.
Find someone on Reddit.
Find someone on Reddit. You don't even need to find someone on Reddit. There are this is a specialty now. This is a career for people. People go into this industry hoping to run social media strictly for teams. It is a profession, and there are professionals out there that are very, 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 very good at this. Hire one and don't just hire them and say, oh, well, we can't say this, we can't say that. Well, that's not us. But no, hire them. Get out of the way. Give them the tool.
Ryan
Tweet
T.
that account.
Smith. Ryan T. Smith. Ryan.
If you could get Ryan Smith out of law school, yeah, go hire Ryan Smith, because he would literally be the perfect human for this. But he's also in law school and he's about to be 3L. So I don't necessarily think that he's going to drop out of his last year of law school to go run social media for us. But God,
for the good of the program, Ryan.
Do it for all of us.
Drop out.
So I'm really terrible at social media. You guys may have noticed. I'm pretty dry in real life, and it doesn't translate very well. So
you're funny. We can tell you're dry funny. You act dry and like you act all quiet and stuff, but you are low key very funny.
Well, hey, I appreciate that, but it doesn't really work on social media. But one thing I think that, and I think you mentioned it, and I'm not an expert, but it can engender a lot of goodwill for, the program, and no, it's just, for the Twitter user. But here's what I'll use as my example for that. Just kind of thinking, because I've seen his name pop up for people, and I've seen fans throw his name out as some guy that, you know, we got to get this guy. If Strong gets let go, let's bring in Lane Kiffin. He stays on top of people's consciousness because he is very engaging on Twitter. And what do you think? What's his record at FAU? What do you think?
It's not great.
19-12. But
of that was his first year, right? He won 11 his first year, right?
Yeah. So he's kind of been able to kind of stay at the top of people's consciousness, engendered a lot of goodwill for himself, where probably 10 years ago he was probably quite hated, maybe even less than 10 years ago. But he's kind of just used humor and just kept, you know, he tweeted through it. And now when these jobs come open, everyone's, oh, what about Lane Kiffin? It's like, well, you know, just because he's kind of kept himself and he's kind of rehabilitated his image. And that's something that you can kind of do on a program level, I'd imagine, with your fans as well. It's kind of rehabilitate your image. And I think everyone wants now, especially, it's like humor sells. They want self-deprecating humor. You want try to be funny, even if it's bad. Like, even a bad attempt is better than just plain.
Yeah. So are you saying that Charlie Strong does not run his own Twitter account?
What?
No, those are coming right off his Twitter fingers. I guarantee it.
I don't know how Charlie tweets with his rotary phone, but somehow, some way, he's figured it out.
That's why the tweets don't come. That's why they don't come very often. It takes a long time to get to that. You know,
he's got to send a post to the advertisement agency, and then they gotta proofread it. I gotta put the emojis.
It takes like four rotations just to get to the S, you know. So
where's the bull strong emoji fit in there?
There's no emojis on the rotary, so you have to like go to the desktop, and then it's rough.
It's a whole thing.
TweetDeck won't load up on the old. Oh my gosh!
The Motorola two-way pager.
I was gonna say the old Famicom 64.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so we're getting dusted in that way. And so not only are we getting dusted on the field, except for last week, but we're also getting dusted off the field, and that really sucks, and I want us to fix it. And it's not a hard fix. It's a mindset and an attitude fix.
Don't you think that's something that's probably coming with – because the AD is very engaging on Twitter, is he not?
He's terrific, and he gets
it. So don't you think that's something that's probably coming?
From the middle of the university instead of from the athletics? Probably so, yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it's coming from University Communications, Mark. That's my bad.
Seth, he loves you. I think Michael Kelly is your biggest fan. Yeah,
smart man, huh?
So yeah, he's he gets it, and MK, like, he really understands it. Like, follow him on Instagram. He's posting Instagram stories from the Riverwalk like every morning with like Stardew music. Like, he knows what he's doing. I'd rather have him running the account right now than some of the stuff that we put out. At least it'd be a little more interesting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Don't you think that his influence will trickle down
eventually? I hope so. Yeah, but we're in like month 15. You know, I would have thought it would have gotten further already.
Well, he's probably got some more important things to worry about first, I'd imagine.
What?
Yeah, he's got to build that indoor practice facility by his own hands.
Brick by brick. So if you're into Olympic sports?
Olympic sports. So you ready to get slimed on Friday?
Yeah, so volleyball's got some slime green uniforms. They're even calling them slime green. That's not us.
Slime.
Apparently, a rumor is, can we confirm this on air? Why the hell not? We're going to wear slime green in most sports this year when we play our friends up the street. Is that confirmed?
No.
We've heard whisperings.
We've heard whisperings. We'll speculate on podcasts. I'm not a writer anymore. I can be irresponsible.
A big missed opportunity here. If you don't go with the ooze, where you can easily incorporate the Ninja Turtles into this. I think that's a big miss.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Welcome to being a part of the USF media program. I'm excited to see how the basketball uniforms look for that, though. I think basketball uniforms have been absolutely fire.
The practice stuff looks great.
That's practice.
I mean, but just like the colors and everything they're using.
Yeah, if that lime green translates to the court, yes, for the games. I mean, I'd buy that Pride jersey right now.
Yeah.
So we'll start with volleyball. Volleyball lost 2 last week. ECU in 3. Cincy on the road, who is receiving votes. They did pick a set off of them, but lost in 4. They get the Knights at home for homecoming. The Knights are pretty good. They did flame out in the tournament last year, but they did win the conference. They're very good, and they didn't graduate a lot either. So I think they returned, I want to say, all 6 starters that they had from last year. So not great. But we get them on homecoming. I can't even go. I'm going to another event, so I won't even be there on Friday night, which sucks because I would have liked to have seen these lime green unis in person. But volleyball struggling a little bit. 1-3 in the league. They did beat Temple up in the season, have dropped 3 in a row, and 1-9 in sets, which not great. They also get SMU on Sunday. I can go to that one, so I will try and get out there and see them at some point. Yeah, just not where they thought they'd be right now. 7-11, lost 3 in a row, and they're 1-3 in the league.
Yep.
All right, I'm only responsible for 1 Olympic team. Steve, you're a soccer genius.
Yeah, I was about to say, since I took that over. So men's soccer had a game at Tulsa get called in the 67th minute. Rather unfortunate, considering if it got to the 70th minute, they can call it final. They were up 2-1 at the time. So that game is going to get rescheduled. Nothing counts from it. No minutes counted or anything from that. More importantly, though, this previous Sunday, women's soccer traveled to Dallas, beat SMU, who was receiving quite a bit of attention prior. They were ranked number 22, and I believe it was the United Soccer's Coaches Poll. So got a nice 1-0 victory. The Evelyn Vienne show continues on. Scored her goal, continues to set records for the program and in the American as well. She's just absolutely crushing her career. She's probably going to go down as one of the best players that we're going to see in this conference in general. But then moving forward, men's soccer plays SMU on Friday. That is a tough game. Men's soccer is ranked number 2 in some polls right now. I don't think they've dropped a match yet. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're going to challenge for the conference title this year. They have a very complete team this year, so that should be a tough test for Bob Butehorn and their staff. But that's basically it. Women's soccer is off till next Thursday, so they have almost 2 full weeks off.
And, good chance to get healthy. There we go.
Yeah.
I like it.
And golf is playing, and women's sailing is going on. I'm looking at our composite calendar, and I'm seeing sports I didn't even think were playing right now. Men's tennis is at Florida State on Sunday, apparently.
So the spring sports can practice in fall, and I believe golf has gone to like where the fall counts a little bit now. I asked Coach Bradley about this last year, and I can now say that I've forgotten what he told me, but they've gone to like a certain amount of tournaments now in the fall. Players can compete for individual and some team things like rankings and things like that. So those things count now, which is cool. For the country club sports, they really should kind of play fall and spring. It just makes more sense. Like, you know, you can spread out your competitions. You can work around exams a little bit easier. You know, these kids, what are they doing in the fall? They're going and hitting balls all day anyway. So if you're in the facility and you're hitting balls, why not be able to practice as well against other teams? We went out there last year when they played a heads up match with Marquette, which was fun. So yeah, like more of that stuff. I think that's cool. I would like to see more sports that are not as much contact, where you're not going to wear kids out.
Yeah.
Go year round. More bowling too.
Speaking of non-contact sports, something that we harped on a lot. And I'm going to just briefly go over this. There's been some very, very vast improvements on our cross country program. The coach that they brought in, whose name's escaping me right now, there's been incremental improvements, but this past weekend, they won the USF Invitational. They're not bringing, top tier opponents or anything like that to these cross country meets, but, the fact that they're finally able to kind of garner this attention, and get some, you know, good wins under their belt. I mean, it was St. Thomas University from Florida, Bethune-Cookman, and Kaiser University was at this meet. But, you know, the fact that they're seeing incremental improvements is speaking towards how Mike Kelly wants these programs to be. You know, they need to get competitive.
That coach's name is Eric Jenkins. I think we discussed him before.
Ken Jenkins.
Yeah. He, you know, has won at like every level, came from Western Kentucky. Clearly knows what he's doing. We seem to be heading in an upward direction. We had a runner win an award for the week, and we didn't even know those things were available. And we found that out this weekend. Let's actually shout that girl out, because she's the first award winner we've seen. I will find it here. Hold on. Weir. Her name is Alexandra Weir. Congratulations. The AAC Female Runner of the Week. An award literally that it's been so long since USF has won it, we did not know it existed. This is our sixth year in the league, seventh year in the league. It might be the first time it's ever. She won first place at the USF Invitational. Ran a 5K in 18:42 to help USF capture the team title. There we go. They close out the regular season Friday in Tallahassee at the FSU Invitational. So there you go.
18:42. I can barely do 30.
And she's doing it on like grass and like that. And that's at USF. So they ran it on the USF golf course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like she's on a track going that fast either. She's doing it over
that's wet, soppy grass.
Yeah, gross. So, good job, Alexander. Congratulations. Last thing. We're starting to get into basketball now, and the reason is that I don't know if you guys saw, we got a new court. Court looks fire.
Real
says
good.
South Florida on the baselines, the logo's in the middle. We got brand new wood. It's going to be awesome.
Green all the way across the edges, more vibrant, iconic view, front and center.
It looks really, really cool. You can check it out on both you at USF MBB and at USF WBB. They both showed up. And it got us, I had a good conversation with some folks this weekend. And one of the things that I thought was interesting is, everybody says, you know, we're negative about football, you know, that we're, you know, down on the program, everything like that. You will not hear a negative word out of any of us about basketball. And I got to thinking about why that was. And I think it's a couple of reasons. One, there's an expectation of winning at football that is much higher, because it is easier to win in football at the University of South Florida against this competition than it is to win in basketball. You know, this league still has teams like UConn and Cincinnati that have great tradition and history, that can compete, that have committed to basketball, that sell a lot more tickets, that sell a lot more season tickets, and that generally have a much, much higher interest in how their basketball teams perform, whereas the USF fan base is basically 90-some percent football, 80-some percent football at least. So there's an expectation there. But the other thing is that you've got two coaches in Brian Gregory and Jose Fernandez that if you need a speaker at a Kokwanis club on a Friday morning in May and you call them, they'll be there. If you want to help get involved in that program and either one of those programs in any way to support them on or off the floor, charitable events, whatever it is, your phone calls get returned. They engage with this community every single day. And you can tell the work that Jose has done for 20 years here by the number of season tickets that they sell and the crowds that they get at their games and the crowds they even got when they weren't as good as they are now. They went out and hustled and worked it and bought into this community. It was always a tough job. You know, women's basketball before Jose got here had literally never won anything. No conference championships, no NCAA tournaments, no WNITs, no regular seasons, literally nothing. And he's made that program something that is a point of pride of the school. Brian Gregory got here and inherited a total steaming shit fire. Like, and there's no other way to describe it, because other than having no players and possibly being under investigation by the NCAA, everything was going well. and he, year one, found a bunch of transfer seniors. They played hard. They did the best they could. They fought. They had a nice little lift there at the end of the season, you know, and got knocked out of the tournament. But, hey, you know what? That's all right. They played really hard, and they gave a great effort. And then last year, what did we see? We saw a team that just committed to each other, to defense, to athletic, fun, exciting basketball. Brian Gregory comes on this podcast, meets us out at the patio, and he can't wait to talk about his team. And he doesn't just do that with us. He does that with every single community partner that we have. You know, whether that's dinners at the Columbia restaurant with his three-point club, or getting out in some of our less advantaged areas of Tampa, reaching out that way, he does it every single day. He's bought into this city, to this campus, and to this program. And so the success that you see on the floor, I don't think those two are indirect. I think the reason that they're winning and the reason that they've turned it around is they said, I'm going to be here. I'm a part of this campus. I'm a part of this community. And I want to reach out. And that shows to the kids that you're trying to bring to your program. And then once they get here, it gives them buy-in to what you're selling. And also, it really helps, too, that, like, both these coaches, it's all character kids. And that's – sometimes that's tougher to do in places where you're trying to compete, you know, top 10. Or sometimes it's tougher to do in football. But Jose's, you know, APR is, you know – pretty close to 1,000, if it's not 1,000 exactly. BG's got, you go meet these kids. They're really, really good, fun, interesting, engaging, good kids. It shows, man. It just does. And I'm starting to think that the coaches that are going to have success, and it's not just those two, but we think about basketball. You know, Kenny Erickson's been here forever. He's bought into the city. He knows Tampa like the back of his hand. He's a part of it. But George Kiefer was here. You know, same thing. Running clinics every weekend, trying to get as many kids on campus as they possibly can, especially once they got Corbettville.
But I think you got to buy into this community because this is such a strange place. It's still a campus that's very new to football.
There, it's still got the thought that it's a commuter campus when it's really not anymore, but there's still that perception out there that it's a commuter school. And the bigger issue is that, you know, the commitment to the university is not as much with athletics, it's with academics. So you got to go out and fight. And those two guys have gone out and fought. And so you're going to see the results on the floor this year. That's why we're optimistic, because of what they've done, not just on the floor, not just what they've shown in terms of wins and losses and recruiting and coaching, but the way that they bought into this community. And I think that makes a difference. That is my thesis.
Yeah, no, that was pretty much nailing it right on the head when it comes to our basketball program right now.
Thank you. And with that, I will ride off into the sunset.
You mean yes. Turn around and go into your bedroom?
Yeah, pretty much. I am sitting in the dining room. I was going to laugh. All right, we're done. Anyway, this was fun. We should do this without Nathan more often.
Your words, not mine.
It was a joke. I was kidding. He does a really good job.
Oh, yeah.
Put everything under fire.
That's why I've gone an hour and a half or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's totally me not keeping anything under control. So anyway, we're done. See you guys on Saturday. Man, beat BYU. Be nice to your Cougar friends. Let's hope we can pull something out of our butt here and get this thing turned around. Let's hope Seth's right and I'm wrong. Go Bulls.
Go Bulls. Fuck the Cougars.
Go Bulls indeed.
Lord.
Sorry.
Hello, my name is...